The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
We look at this union workers, dock workers strike that will be impacting all of us up and down the East Coast as well as the Gulf. But here in Philadelphia, this affects us. We've been talking about that this morning. And then what about Israel? Israel promising retaliation and perhaps trying to take out some of the oil fields in Iran after Iran deployed all those missiles, 200 reportedly, against Israel. So the retaliation is promised. And this the day before the Jewish New Year, tomorrow, Rosh Hashanah, a lot of schools off. So covering these stories and more, and of course, getting your reaction to the vice presidential debate last night, J.D. Vance on the Republican side, definitely the winner in my humble opinion, somebody who comes from humble beginnings and grew up a Democrat. I mean, really was able to explain himself. I think that that was great that he talked about his history, his life, military service, U.S. Marine, all of that, up against the vice presidential candidate for the Democrats under Kamala Harris, the vice president, and that is vice presidential candidate, the governor of Minnesota, Tim Walz. So I wanted to just switch locally to a story about, well, we'll go from stolen valor and that by Tim Walz to stolen signs. What's up with political signs? Do you have one in your yard, whether it's for somebody like senatorial candidate Dave McCormick here in Pennsylvania or a Trump sign, perhaps? Have you had trouble with those signs disappearing? That brings us to Susan in Chester County. Hey, Susan, what's going on?
Hey, Dawn. Just a quick, I loved Vance last night. I just wish when they were talking to abortion, he had been able to pivot to parents' rights and the fact that
yes,
minors can go get surgery. But anyway, we have this little site, and somebody was complaining that their Harris sign was stolen. And she said, and for everyone that laughs, I'm going to give $100 to the Harris campaign. Well, what I didn't understand is that there is a law in Pennsylvania that you can't steal political signs, and you can't put an opposing sign less than 1 foot from the opposing candidate's sign. And she's putting up cameras so she can catch the people and turn them into the police. I mean, I had a Trump sticker on my car. My car was keyed, the whole side.
Mm.
So I won't do that anymore. My neighbor had a Trump flag, which was stolen. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And that's just it. I think that a lot of, depending on where you live, I think there are a lot of Trump supporters, especially that know, depending on where you live, that if you put up a sign, you could get your house, they could egg your house, vandalism. And especially like you're saying, I had a girlfriend, we were at a charity fundraiser where you would valet your car, and she had for her keychain, it was a Trump keychain. It was cute. And mm-hmm. Do you know that when she got her keys back from the valet, it was broken?
Yeah, you know? Well, I live in Chester County, and when I first moved here, it was really red. And now we have all these very wealthy people who don't have a clue about if she wins and unearned gains, taxes on unearned gains, which will put family farms out of business when they paid $10 an acre, and now 100 years later, it's $10,000 or $50,000 mm-hmm. an acre. I mean, and I talk to people, oh, that's not true. Well, look it up. Don't listen to me. But they don't want to know. They don't want to know.
Well said. Well, Susan, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
If for those of you that put the sign up or the bumper sticker, you know, just be warned. And that's the unfortunate piece of it. The same people with the hate has no home here sign, they're the ones who might think about doing something like that. Isn't that special? So 855-839-1210, the number to call. Let's get to, is it Richard? Hey, Richard. Havertown?
Hi.
Hey.
I wanted to say thank you for your astute remarks about the debate last night, and I think you're right. The individual Vance has acquitted himself quite well. One of the things I will tell you, and I think it's true, Trump picked him specifically for what he saw in him, and he is an excellent attorney, and he clearly made the case for Trump and what he's able to do. and clearly made the case against, because he constantly went after Harris. He sort of reminds me of Ted Cruz, but not with the edge. Ted Cruz is just rubs people the wrong way on a national scale. He certainly made himself feel comfortable, even though he was fighting 3-on-1. And I think the public, and certainly I did, felt that he was at ease, but he was able to stand up for himself quickly and efficiently when they took the microphone away from him, the obnoxiousness, as Britt Hume said, became palpable. It was clear that it was a 3-on-1. And those two women were no Edward R. Murrow and Fred Friendly, which used to be what CBS had. Mm-hmm. They clearly have changed the political bias to the point that it becomes so overt that everyone sees it. And now the public is less afraid to say something about it. And I do agree with you with the signs with that lady before. My wife and I would never put a sign up because it's too dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I live in a Democrat area, and you would clearly have a problem. I mean, they would damage your home, damage your vehicles, and you just don't need that. So I just wanted to say thank you for what you've done, and I hope you keep it up, and
thank
I'm sure you.
You
will.
Are we sure that Richard's not Britt Hume calling in?
I know. Thank you, Richard.
Here's Britt Hume's voice.
Well, the moderators were obnoxious and made it feel like 3-on-1.
I'm very similar there, Richard. Just put that out there.
Richard, really appreciate you. And, yeah, I mean, you and your wife have to put your safety first, and that's unfortunate. I think that's real. You heard Susan say her car was keyed when she had a Trump bumper sticker. That's terrible, you know, that we're in this place where we can't.
I think you'll find that people become extraordinarily politically obnoxious today.
Yeah.
People today are very one-sided. I've lost friends. You can't have conversations. But I will say that politically, there's such a diametric opposition between the Republican candidate Trump and the Democrat candidate that's trying to pretend she's brand new, Harris.
Yes.
And having listened to Vance say clearly, you've been there for over 1,400 days. That was when your first day began.
And that was great.
That's important to make sure she's not the new candidate. She's the incumbent.
To your point,
I think was point was well made.
Thank Richard. Thank you for the call. Really appreciate
Britain, it. Britain Manhattan. It's not Richard Havertown. It's Britain Manhattan. That you're
thank you, Richard. But
no, hey. I'm in Havertown. Don't worry about it. I really am Richard from Havertown.
Thank you, Richard. Dan, you know what? To Richard's point, why don't you go to the part where J.D. Vance says that Walz is kind of playing a game of whack-a-mole.
Honestly, Tim, I think you got a tough job here because you've got to play whack-a-mole. You've got to pretend that Donald Trump didn't deliver rising take-home pay, which of course he did. You've got to pretend that Donald Trump didn't deliver lower inflation, which of course he did. And then you simultaneously got to defend Kamala Harris's atrocious economic record, which has made gas, groceries, and housing unaffordable for American citizens. I was raised by a woman who would sometimes go into medical debt so that she could put food on the table in our household. I know what it's like to not be able to afford the things that you need to afford. We can do so much better. To all of you watching, we can get back to an America that's affordable again. We just got to get back to common sense economic principles.
Yeah, and I also thought J.D. Vance tried to, he kept trying to give a hopeful aspect to things, and I thought that was good too. It wasn't all doom and gloom. And he continued to talk about what they agreed on, finding common ground, bipartisan support. And I think that's part of his personality. That's what he's like in the Senate. So he's a hopeful person. I just wanted to mention to you that there is word that, you know, Trump and Harris had both CBS 60 Minutes was trying to put on a special for next Monday and interviewing both Trump and Harris. They have announced that former President Trump backed out of a previously scheduled interview with 60 Minutes, which is the most watched news magazine in the nation. This announcement from CBS News. Full disclosure, I worked for CBS News Network, hosted CBS News Saturday Morning, and worked for CBS-owned stations in Chicago and here in Philadelphia for many years, worked for CBS 3. But now Trump releasing a statement saying fake news, 60 Minutes begged for an interview, even after they were caught lying about Hunter Biden's laptop back in 2020, there were initial discussions, but nothing was ever scheduled or locked in. And that's a statement from the official Trump campaign spokesperson, Stephen Chung. So that's they're calling it fake news that they never, in fact, had locked in the interview. But CBS News is saying that he backed out. That's the headline here. So just to give you a heads up on that one. 855-839-1210, the number to call. Let's get to Stan in New Hope. Love New Hope, especially this time of year as the fall comes, you know, sets in.
Newport.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Newport, not New Hope.
Oh, I thought it said New Hope. Sorry. So sorry.
Well, how about Newport, Don? Do you like Newport?
Love it this time of year.
That's beautiful, yeah.
So really what I called about was, you know, watching all that last night, J.D. Yeah. Vance, because he's a child of an alcoholic, all right, there's certain things that as a child of an alcoholic, if your parent is involved in any of the programs or organizations that are truly involved in helping someone recover, there's certain things that we're taught. You know, obviously, I will never get well by admitting or confessing the ills of others. So he did not go and keep attacking walls on lies because he wasn't going to confess for walls. Mm-hmm. You know, and the other thing is he didn't have to prepare the way that walls did, because if you're not lying and if you are truly what you say you are, you can stand there, look right into the camera and say, this is who I am, and yeah, this is what I represent. And this is the true and honest answer to that question, because I don't have anything to hide behind it. I don't have to remember something that I know is a lie.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I mean, if somebody is lying, they do have to prepare for that, maybe have some notes that they scribble down, or even you could see him and he was like scribbling down notes like, oh, you have to remember what I said. Which is, that's a
so
job in and of itself.
Trump, if you look at Trump and you look at J.D. Vance, neither one really did a ton of preparation, because the thing is, what they're answering is they're answering honestly from what they know. I think the only place that J.D. Vance fell short last night was when they talked about January 6th, and he didn't say something this simple. I really don't know all the details about what took place there, about the individuals who did what they did. You know, I haven't gone into all the details of it and the court hearings, so I really can't give you an honest answer about that. That would have been the answer to give, because if you don't know all the information, then you're not lying about anything.
Right.
And you're actually giving an answer that tells the people that, look, I'll look into it if you're asking me to, but I really don't know all the details, so it's not a question that I feel like I'm qualified to answer for you.
Yeah, here's the thing. I just wonder if J.D. Vance was just tempted when they asked the J6 question, which was toward the end. And that was their, you know, their showcase question. Clearly, they were holding it until the end. And I wonder if J.D. Vance was tempted to say, really, this is when we have literally we have Middle East tension and a crisis in the Middle East. We have historic biblical flooding in this country with, as we're speaking, hundreds of people still missing. You haven't really asked energy questions. You haven't really asked about our military experience, but you're talking about an event, right? You're talking about an event that I personally had nothing to do with, and this was four years ago.
That's why I said he truly did a restraint of pen and tongue. The restraint was that he was not going to get better at what he was doing by confessing the ill of others. And their response to January 6th and the setup that they did against every Republican who was in Washington on that day and everybody who's been involved in it ever since has been fraught with fraud. And it is consistently, you know, Trump has asked many times for people to really look at all the details that took place with the court hearings. You know, they were never given standing. They were never given the things that they really needed in order to be able to address the issues, you know, and, you know, in that respect, That's a complete disrespect to what was at the time a sitting president and also a candidate. And they've done nothing but disrespect him as a candidate and as a president and former president ever since.
Yeah.
So, and even from the very beginning. So, you know, I think that both of them, because of their direct honestness with the American people, you know, yeah, okay, occasionally there's embellishments, but that's not coming from Vance, you know. Trump occasionally does embellish, but you know what? In the overall scheme of things, the man has told this country everything he would do, and he did it. And he's going to do it again. Give him a chance.
Yeah. Thank you. I really appreciate it, Stan. Thank you. Speaking of that, I will say this, just glancing up at some headlines, New York Times, and they say, after a back and forth of the within the vice presidential debate that showcased the strengths, but also some weaknesses, of Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio, the campaigning resumes in earnest on Wednesday. That's how the New York Times chooses to say there were weaknesses of Vance. So you're telling me there were no weaknesses when, you know, the other guy, Governor Walz, called himself a knucklehead. Admitted that he, you know, had some knuckleheaded rhetoric or moments, etc.
Perfect. And I'm a knucklehead at times, but it's always been about that.
Yeah, so knucklehead, but they're not going to put that in the headline. What do they say here? There's another line that just, see this, I don't even know why I read this because it just triggers me. But I will tell you where they are today because Walz is here in Pennsylvania today. I believe Vance is headed to, yes, Michigan. Where is the vice president, Kamala Harris? She'll be in Georgia. We don't know. Will this be another 20-minute appearance like she was at the border? Not sure. But she will at least be in Georgia to discuss hurricane relief efforts. But then she'll be headed to the Fox Valley of Wisconsin. And that's in the Green Bay. I think it's south of Green Bay. And that will be tomorrow. So we'll see how much time she's spending. Now, I thought that Biden was going to be in one of the southern states, maybe Georgia, tomorrow. So will Harris be there with Biden, or is he not going to go? So I'll have to look that up for you during the next commercial break just to confirm that, because I know the White House had said Biden would be in touring the devastation. Again, historic flooding, the death toll rising, hundreds missing, and more than a million people still without power, without supplies. I did see that Elon Musk, and I saw where Trump had, and somebody put this out on social media, so thank you, where former President Trump had said that he had contacted Elon Musk and had they pretty fairly quickly had, you know, gotten up the Starlink to get some satellite service so folks could at least try to communicate. And then we talked earlier this week in Kale and Company about the fact, I think Nick brought this up, that, you know, AM radio coming to the rescue, that there are some communities where just to get a sense of what's going on and even try to communicate with an AM radio station, that they were at least able to get people some information through AM because everything's down. So we'll continue to update you.
I do have the president's schedule for today if you wanted it.
Yeah.
He's departing Joint Base Andrews to Greenville, South Carolina at 12:10. He's going to arrive at Greenville in 1:20. He's going to get an aerial tour of the impacted areas in Greenville at 1:45. Departing Greenville at 3 o'clock to go to Raleigh, North Carolina.
Raleigh.
Yeah, wow. That was a bad pronunciation there, Dano. 3:45, he's going to arrive in Raleigh. 4:15, he receives an operational briefing. 6:55, he departs Raleigh, comes back to Joint Base Andrews.
So he will be in North Carolina.
And South Carolina today.
And South Carolina. The Veep will be in Georgia. So I want to track this, where they are, because it's interesting that they're not together. And so he'll get operational briefings and he'll greet some first responders. So Raleigh around 4, Raleigh's in North Carolina. So he's in South Carolina first. So I just want to watch this. I want to see where the Veep is, because thus far, I know that she had the picture of her on the airplane. She had the FEMA briefing. She was in D.C. So we'll see. Will she take some questions? Is there a pool of reporters with her? Will she take any of their questions? That's my question moving forward. 855-839-1210. Quick break here, and then we'll come back with more. We have a lot to tell you about and a great interview. Tell you what's going on here in Pennsylvania with protecting kids, with some great legislation when we talk about social media, when we talk about cell phone use. This involves our Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman, who's a Democrat, Katie Britt, who is a Republican, and they've come together. We learned about their friendship. She's married. I didn't know she was married to a football player. I guess I should have known that. I'm sorry.
I'm not either. So you're good.
But she's a Republican from Alabama, and they came together really in the name of mental health warnings and safety for kids. But they've introduced this bill to require mental health warning labels on social media platforms. They were recently together doing an interview on Fox News with Brett Baer. So listen in.
About a warning label, essentially, on social media.
Absolutely. Well, you heard the Surgeon General himself just say it. When children are on social media, their rate of anxiety and depression increases. We know our kids aren't on social media for minutes or even a few hours. They're on social media on average 5 hours a day. Knowing what we know, it's imperative that we give people a proper warning to say, you know, here are the challenges that are presented. And then ultimately, one thing we're really proud about our bill is it also gives people access to help. So when people find themselves in a mental health crisis, our bill says there has to be a link that shows people how to get help in the face of that. And it really is the defining issue right now for our children. And it's important that we do something. Doing nothing's not an option.
And so that's on the federal level. But here in Pennsylvania, one state senator is way ahead of them. Wanted to improve students' mental health, academic performance, social skills, and this was ahead of the school year, so this announcement was made over the summer. So Senator Ryan Aument is going to join me, and we'll talk about this law, new law that incorporates how they can keep kids secure, be respectful of maybe their cell phone, and it's really widely supported. So we'll talk to him about his idea, how to improve students' mental health, as well as their grades, their academic performance. Another great idea from locally, from Pennsylvania. So my conversation with him just ahead. But I loved the fact that we did have Fetterman coming together with his fellow Democrat. They're both freshman senators, and talking about the fact that her husband and his wife, that the four of them had met, they really hit it off.
Well, yeah, we actually, our relationship kind of started. It's like, we had the whole spouse, and it was like orientation. And it's like, this is a guy that's bigger than me. And we just kind of clicked at that point and developed a friendship. And then, yeah, she visited me at Walter Reed, and So ever since then,
our spouses connected immediately. We got to know each other, obviously, and in orientation. Yeah. And
her husband had the kind of career I wish I had playing football.
Football player, yeah.
Mine didn't turn into much, but he made it to the NFL. But yeah, they're just wonderful people.
And we
it never came about the politics or what team that you're in.
No.
It's just about, you know, like, hey, working for what's, I think, better for America. And that's kind of why we're here today.
Amen.
It was nice. That's all I'm going to say. It was a nice moment. And maybe these, you know, young senators, first time senators coming together like that, maybe they can get some things done and find common ground. So it was nice to see my conversation with our Pennsylvania state senator on improving students' mental health and academic performance. That's right around the corner. But speaking of common ground and hitting the road, well, maybe you're looking for some new wheels as you head place to place. As we're now in October, the fall season, heading out for some road trips. Well, are you ready? My friends at Piazza Premium Automobiles, they're going to help make sure you and your family are safe out on the roads. These service centers are the Piazza Premium dealers. They not only handle, you know, all your regular maintenance stuff, right? Everything you need, but they also can diagnose any possible issues or problems before they can happen, you know, before you hit the road. Just schedule that service appointment online today. PiazzaPremiumAutomobiles.com, P-I-A-Z-Z-A, PiazzaPremiumAutomobiles.com for that dealer nearest you. And they're across Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware. PiazzaPremiumAutomobiles.com.
Suicide is a leading cause of death, or second leading cause of death under the age of 44 years old. When you look at what's happening to our young people, the rate of depression is more than doubled just between the years of 2011 and 2019. And Brett, when you look at what we've just received with regards to young women, one in three high school young women said she actually considered taking her own life. And then 9% of our high school population, so 9 out of 100, said they actually attempted assisted death by suicide. And so John and I are approaching this not just as senators, but as parents. And we believe that parents need all the information.
And so that was Alabama Senator Katie Britt working with the John she's referring to, Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman, and both of them saying that their parental duty and their parental priorities really supersede any kind of political differences, that for them, this is their common ground as parents to serve the nation's children. So they've introduced together legislation that would stop the scroll. So the idea here is that social media can be harmful for kids. Let's stop them from scrolling on certain social media, especially at school. But it's a bipartisan act that would ensure all users, especially kids and teens, are aware of the potential mental health risks associated with social media use, and would actually require social media companies to direct users toward mental health resources. And so that's the latest on the Stop the Scroll Act that requires the pop-up warning label for access. So that's on the federal level. But I will tell you, somebody here in Pennsylvania, way ahead of them in many ways, maybe they got their inspiration from my next guest. And this is our own Pennsylvania State Senator, and this is Senator Ament joining me right now. Ryan Ament, State Senator Ament, thank you so much for joining me to talk about what you're doing along these lines, where you're just trying to protect kids' access from smartphones, and you're saying that it also improves their performance at school. So welcome in. Tell me about it.
So good to be with you, Dawn. Yes, that's right. And I got involved with this issue first and foremost as a dad. I have two children. My son Jack is 14. He's in eighth grade. My daughter June is 11. She's in fifth grade, and our children do not have smartphones. My wife and I have made that decision. Now, they do have iPads, which we very closely monitor. But I have just seen in my own children, and certainly in their friends and the struggles that their friends' families have, mm-hmm. navigating technology at home. This is a really important conversation, certainly for families. But I believe very strongly that it's critical, absolutely essential, that we free our kids from smartphones, access to smartphones and social media for the 6.5 hours during the school day. And I'm convinced if we do that, we will see an improvement in the mental health crisis. There's clear, compelling data that links the mental health crisis among adolescents, feelings of depression, isolation, anxiety, attempted suicide and suicide, attempted self-harm and self-harm, a clear link between that and access to social media and the rise of smartphones. So I believe when we take that step in our schools, we'll see an improvement in mental health, an improvement certainly in the school culture, the school environment, school safety, but also in our students' academic performance, where we've seen a decline certainly since 2012 as smartphones, particularly with the 24/7 Wi-Fi access to the front-facing phone, the link to social media, a clear correlation.
And so for you, not only, you know, putting out the legislation, which you receive that bipartisan support, I think that's great that people can come together as, you know, as parents, like you're saying, but it involves, how does it work with the special lockable smartphone bag for students, and that it incorporates some money for, right? So providing a resource here as to the how are schools going to do this?
Yeah, and I appreciate you highlighting the bipartisan nature of this. It really has been, and it should be a bipartisan nature. I was pleased to learn of the efforts by Senator Fetterman and Senator Katie Britt that are underway federally. And we've seen across the country this movement at the state level. Republican governors such as Glenn Youngkin and Sarah Huckabee Sanders, mm-hmm. and Democratic governors, as well as Republican and Democrat departments of education that have begun to take these steps. And we see local school districts taking action as well, even when there's not a state policy in place. Recognizing local control in Pennsylvania, the step that we've taken, and I'm certainly going to evaluate whether there's not additional steps that need to be taken. But the step that we've taken with our budget this year is to provide funding out of our mental health and school safety grants that was funded this year at $100 million in the state budget. And we've said to local school districts that if you enact a policy, go smartphone free. Again, I refer to it as bell to bell, 6.5 hours, total freedom for the device from the device during the school day, that you can apply for funding, school safety and mental health funding, to purchase lockable bags where students would come in at the beginning of school day, drop their devices into these bags. They'd be locked. They could not access the phone until the end of the school day. The benefit of that type of approach, from my perspective, is that students' families maintain possession of their property. Many families are resistant to turn over very valuable property and risk loss, damage, or a device being stolen. Many educators are hesitant to enforce their own policies because they don't want to be in the position to take a phone and have it stolen or lost or damaged in some way. So it's like a laptop bag, but for a smartphone that is locked, and the student would maintain possession. They would not be able to access the phone unless it were unlocked at the end of the school day. Mm-hmm. And so we provided funding for school districts who wish to take that approach. And I'm certainly working very hard to elevate the conversation so the districts will consider that approach.
You know, I'll just say this to you, that it's easier said than done when you're the only parent among a parent group who all the other kids have smartphones. Why can't I have a phone? My husband and I, like you and your wife, I mean, we held off as long as we could. So our kids were, and it was mostly because we were both working. They were 7th, 8th grade. So what do you say to the parent who's listening right now, or a grandparent who maybe can help out with this, as far as the why and maybe your plea, as far as to that parent who has a child as young as 8? And they were saying, Mom and Dad, but all my friends, they have a smartphone.
Yeah. And I'm living that, Dawn, particularly with my son who's in the 8th grade. And it's a difficult conversation. It's a difficult conversation for my wife and I with our children, and certainly with other parents. We don't want our children to feel isolated. We don't want them to feel left out. And so this is a really important community conversation. This is a really important family conversation. So while I am out in the community and we have a back to school night where I'm hosting a town hall event, a panel discussion later this month, where we're going to invite the community in to have this conversation, as I have town hall events, as I talk about this publicly, while I'm certainly focused on the legislative effort and what happens in the school, this is a really important conversation for families and communities. The pendulum has swung so far in the direction of the technology and access technology. It's happened so quickly, and parents are feeling the pressure. And what I would encourage parents is to really think through what the implications of that are and what a phone-free childhood, or certainly a reduced phone childhood, what that would look like, what the benefits of that would be. My wife, who also teaches in a school, their school went smartphone free this school year, perhaps maybe at my encouragement a little bit. And the first thing my wife said she's noticed a month in is that two things. First, the number of students requesting to use the restroom during a class period has plummeted. Used to be 6 or 7 kids per class period, and many of them chronic abusers of that. Now it's 5 or 6 the entire day. The second observation is the hallways and the cafeteria is loud because kids are actually conversing or talking to one another. What we see happening, we're raising a generation of young people that are more comfortable operating and navigating the virtual world, but not the real world. And there's a real consequence to that academically. We think sometimes, parents, that the technology is opening up the world to our kids. But what we've done is we've opened our kids up to the world. And so we just, as families, as communities, have to think through this and together begin to delay the introduction of this technology. Mm-hmm. And so I'm so pleased to see grassroots groups in school districts and around the state where parents are signing pledges to delay the introduction of phones and delay the introduction of social media and doing that together, because you're right, the pressure is so strong and we don't want our kids to feel left out. But the consequences in terms of the mental health, the academic decline, the development of our kids, of their brains, the data on this is so clear. And the data, I think, affirms, when parents look at the data, will affirm what you're actually seeing in your own kids.
Yeah, what do you say, Senator Ahmed, about the parent who says, you know, I want my child to have their phone that can be off, but I want it on their person, because what if, God forbid, there's an emergency? What if, God forbid, something happens in school and they could be the one to call 911 or text me and update me?
It's a great point, and I think this is the most emotional discussion I've had with families on this policy. Let me sort of first give kind of the technocratic answer, maybe, and then go into the more emotional aspect, and they're both really important conversations. The first is I have conversations around this very issue with school safety experts and law enforcement. The response I hear is, and what I hear from the school safety experts is, in reality, if there is the most horrific of circumstances, a school shooting, what you actually want is your student focused, not distracted, paying attention to the instructions of a responsible adult, not making noise, not texting, not taking video, and not following instructions and guidance from someone outside the building who doesn't have the situational awareness. However, there may be a circumstance in which the child is the person who has to make a call to report something. And so in those circumstances, in those rare circumstances where that's occurred, we do need to have the policies where students can access the phones. They can be rapidly unlocked, or in the case these bags can be rapidly cut open, or there's other technology available to schools that emergency personnel can be contacted immediately. I would make the argument that the data points to the fact that smartphone-free schools are safer schools, particularly when you factor in how the smartphones, the linkage between smartphones, bullying, cyberbullying, and the mental health crisis, the link between that and violence that's occurring in school. So I think it's critical from that perspective, as well as what is the response in an emergency situation and how do we keep kids safe. I think the smartphone-free approach, where there is policies in place to respond, does in fact make our kids safer.
Yes. And so we really appreciate it. For you as a state senator, I often, when I talk to somebody who's in Congress, in other words, at the federal level, versus somebody like you who's at the Pennsylvania level, I just want to ask you, do you feel like you get more done and get more personal satisfaction as far as, because in the news, obviously, it's always sexier, if you will, to report on what everybody disagrees about. But yeah. How would you rate as far as being, you know, in our Pennsylvania legislature, as far as getting things done?
Yeah, this is a wonderful opportunity. I've been blessed to have been here in the Senate for the last 10 years, and I served in the House prior to that. I'll tell you, along your line of questioning, when I was first elected to the state House, I think that someday I wanted to be a member of Congress. Mm-hmm. And the longer I've been here, less appeal, in fact, not less appeal, to go to Washington, D.C. versus working in Harrisburg. And the reason is because I do think the impact in Harrisburg on the lives of the community is far greater than to be a member of Congress in many respects. I know those issues garner a lot more attention, but but what really is impacting folks' lives day to day, I think I can have a far greater impact here in Harrisburg. And the ability to work, to your point, the ability to work here in a bipartisan way, to reach across the aisle, to listen, to get to know your colleagues, to find common ground, to get meaningful things done, I think that's far easier to do here for many reasons than it is Washington, D.C. So this issue has been particularly rewarding for me to work on. I've been pleasantly surprised with the support it's garnered in this building, but particularly outside the building. It struck a chord. There are just so many families out there that are responding, and school district leaders and educators who are saying, this is a huge problem. You have no idea how big of a problem this is. Thank you for taking this on. It's been so rewarding.
Getting things done in Pennsylvania, Senator Ryan Aument, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it, and I hope that we can continue the conversation. Thanks, Dan, for the information. If you're interested, I know a lot of you are commenting. Maybe we'll go to some of your comments. But if you're interested in going to that sort of informational town hall, it'll be, what, October 15th? And that's a back-to-school night. Now I'm trying to pull it up, Dan.
Yeah, no, I got you for you. It's Tuesday, you. October 15th, back-to-school night at Centerville Middle School, 865 Centerville Road in Lancaster.
Lancaster.
Lancaster? Expert panel, discuss cell phones in schools. If you want to attend, head over to the senator's website. You can go to senatoraument.com/outreach-events to register.
Yes. And by the way, thank you, Shannon, and some others who sent me this heads up. I'll try to make this this evening. It's this afternoon, 4 o'clock this afternoon, and it is Athletes for America. So Riley Gaines and Frank Murphy, who played with the NFL, Frank Murphy. I don't know who he played for. Not Eagles, obviously, but it's Riley Gaines. She's like,
all right.
The Bears. So Riley Gaines, we all know, but she'll be at the Trump Force 47, that same office that Kathy Burnett, you know, kicked off. And I was there, I don't know, a month or two ago. It's on Penland Bluebell Pike, and it's in Bluebell, PA. So you want to meet them, Riley Gaines, get a picture with her, and they're just hanging out. It's kind of another Trump Force 47 kind of a thing. I don't know if they'll be giving anything out or signing anything. Can't vouch for that. But I'm just saying. Have you met Riley Gaines in person, Dan?
Not in person. Become very good friends with her via text. So great person.
Yes. Yeah, she's great people.
Hey, so a couple comments coming in on YouTube regarding the last caller. You mind if I give you one
Go
in
for
specific?
It.
Because I want your opinion on this one. YouTube.com/@1210WPHT. Here at WPHT, we pride ourselves on being interactive. So please go like and subscribe, submit your comments, and we'll get back to you. Chris wrote in, there's no chance my kids would be without their cell phones in any school that I, as a parent, didn't believe was safe. I'd even make a tough decision whether they'd be in such a school. But say you had a student or a kid that was in a, you know, unsafe area, known for being unsafe. Would you let him go without a cell phone?
Would I?
Yeah.
Personally?
Yeah.
I loved them. I like that they have phones, but I also know it's a different, like, they're boys. First of all, I think it's different for girls. I didn't get it with the senator. I should have brought that up. I think that I respect that they can have the phone. They keep it in their backpack. Although the high schools are now trying some different policies right now at David's school, where they can't even have the phone out even at lunchtime because of exactly what Senator Aument said. So, yeah, I mean, I think that everybody has to have the conversation. And when you logically look at all the stats, when you think about the impact and even the social media impact on, or excuse me, the social impact on them, that they're sitting there with their phone, much like at the dinner table. Okay, how many times do you see a family, you go out to dinner, and there's the family sitting next to you, and they're all, even the parents, they're all on their phones. So they're not even interacting.
It's so sad. It is. So, we went to Chili's, right? And there was a girl when just trying. She was telling her parents, I was kind of, you know, eavesdropping a little bit, just telling her parents some horrible things. And her parents were just completely distracted on their phones. And I just wonder if this, a lot of the mental health is due to parents being stuck on their phones themselves, which is not listening to their kids.
And that's, so Chris Eppolito, I mean, that's his, I would agree with Chris that just doing this one thing of taking the phones isn't the magic answer. I think part of it is the idea, and that's not the only thing within this legislation, obviously. Part of this is educating everybody and getting everybody on the same page. Because if you have in your school, you all have, you're getting on the same page, you're having student meetings, all the parents get together, right? And now you're all, as a parent, it comes down to the parents. But bottom line, it's not legislation. Chris, I agree with many of you. That's right. Fred Flintstone, Yabba Dabba Doo, but I just think Chris is right. It's more about the parents. It begins with them. This helps kick off the conversation. So Dom Giordano, I know Dom, you know, I'd love to hear Dom's take on this too, as somebody who started out as a teacher and educator. I know you have a lot of opinions about this. Hey, Dom.
Hey, Dawn. Thank you. Bill O'Reilly thinks Vance did a great job humanizing himself last night. And I know he's talked to President Trump about that. So we'll get a little of that conversation. When they were talking about school shootings, Vance tried to really drill down. He talked about locks. He's being mocked for that because of the two dopes that were moderates.
Yes. Yeah, it's... That I'll love to hear O'Reilly's take on the moderators too.
At CBS. Oh, here we go.
This will be good. Dom shows right now.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.